Welcome back, everybody, to the Triangle Anime and Manga Review Podcast. I'm Logan, and here with me today, as always, is Ozzy. How's it going today, Ozzy?
Hey, man, it's going great. It is it's a nice day today. Got our outside activity done this morning, so that was nice. And now we're in here in the studio, laying down some hard beats.
Yes, some hard beats.
You guys should be on lookout for my mixtape. It's out there. I need to be careful. Depending on the place, it might burn. You know, might start like forest fires, stuff like that. You know.
Do you want to give a sample? Like, do you want me to break it down for you right now?
Absolutely not. I think I'm good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, there you go. No, that was a pretty weak beat. I need like the best beats possible for me to actually flourish.
You need some lo-fi beats.
Yes, really lo-fi. Like you're sitting at your desk and like, you know, headphones on, windows open, nice breeze coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like trash cans like banging in the background. Yeah, that stuff. Yeah.
Fair. All right then. Well,
I don't have a mixtape, you guys. I don't rap.
Oh yeah.
Nope.
Political rap.
Oh yeah, that's
the government.
That's exactly what people want to
take
listen to.
Take down demand. I think, what is it? I'm stealing that from Adventure Time. I don't know.
Oh, is it? Anyway. Okay.
The system is broke, yo. Anyway.
My one thing that the government I wish they would do. And they finally did it, is they would allow me to put down Hispanic as a race on the census. For the longest time, I only had the option as white or other, and I would never put white. I'm not going to put white. It's just not going to fucking happen.
Right. Well, you're not.
So. Well, now I can. I can put Hispanic now. I'm glad.
There you go.
So that's the one thing that I've always wanted from the government. And now that they gave it to me, I kind of gave up on my political rap career.
I've wanted them to pay my student loans. When's that going to happen? Fucking... Get on it, Biden. What the hell?
Sleeping on the job, dog.
Yeah. Sleepy Joe.
It's such a terrible nickname, man.
I like that meme of him eating ice cream. It's just like, fuck you guys.
Hey, man. Everyone's likable when they're eating ice cream.
Like, man, I've definitely been there where I'm eating cone ice cream and I'm just like, I don't give a fuck what
I remember. Yeah, exactly. What happened next was you threw up after that.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time, yeah.
Anyway... So, what are we doing here? We are talking and recapping the winter season.
Yeah, we're in spring now.
Yeah. It's crazy how quickly things change, you know. I think, honestly, this season kind of ground to the end there, where it started with a flash and it kind of slowed down and maybe the tires got muddy, we got stuck a couple of times, we just really...
You're about to quote a... What's it called? What's his name?
Brad Paisley.
Yeah, Brad Paisley. Get a little mud on the tires? Mm-hmm. I think he's talking about anal in that
That
song.
Is exactly it's what he's talking song. About in
Get
that
a little
song.
Mud on the tires.
But yeah, look, I don't judge what other people are into.
Absolutely not, dude. If Brad Paisley's all about the, you know, booty, I'm all about it, man.
Yeah, good for him. But yeah. I say good for him. But yeah, so, I mean, I think... When we started out the season, we were hyped. There was a lot of opportunity. There was a lot of good ones. But I guess to the point, not all of them ended the way we hoped they would or kind of expected they would.
Not even like ended. Some of them just kind of started off kind of meh and kind of maintained.
I mean, I think you had a few that were like we were really excited about. And I think it became clear... pretty quickly that they were not going to live up to what we expected of them.
Yeah, and it happens. When we were watching so much, we have seasons that just come out and they knock it out of the park. Or we'll have stuff that just kind of, you know, might quote-unquote blow us away that really just like standouts, I guess. And maybe because we watch so much, when we have seasons that are not as standout, you know, we have a hard time kind of pushing through, you know. Because the reality is there's so much anime out there, whether that's just... you know, returning seasons or new shows or new adaptations. You know, sometimes you'll have a down season. And, you know, it depends on maybe your life, too. You know, if you're busy, if you got other stuff, you might not find that season as interesting.
I think, honestly, it also didn't help that there was a lot of American stuff going on at the time. I mean, I think there's, you know, Shogun came out. We're focused on that. I think Invincible Season 2 came out. So there's a lot of shows that were out this season that made it difficult to keep up with all the anime. And frankly, I think there were just not a lot of... There weren't... Not that there weren't original stories. There just weren't, I think, the stories themselves didn't catch my imagination like they normally do.
Yeah, and that's what I said about the summation of the whole season. Like, you know, I just really think that it was kind of mid-ground, like...
Other than maybe one stand-up.
Yeah, but even then, I think that was a returning one anyways, or continuation. In general, I just felt like it was a fine season. Nothing really kind of, like, blew me away. Like I said, no standout. So I agree that, you know, it just kind of was there. And if you got other stuff going on, you know, you might not be able to get to it all. Yeah. I know I did. I actually finished about four or five series and actually got to, you know, put the time, even though it was a little bit kind of near the back end. I did take off a few weeks here and there just because of life. And came back and finished this season. So we're excited to talk about, you know, what we did get to watch, maybe comment on it a little bit. But more than that, I think we're a little bit more excited about the upcoming season, right? I mean,
yeah,
this is a this is a, you know, the wrap up for winter, but also the kind of jump into the spring. And I know that we talked about the spring having some looking like another packed season.
I will say I think the spring does feel like it's got a lot more volume in terms of what there is out there to watch. And it does feel like it's more of a spread kind of window where it's like there's something for everybody. And there's a couple of knockout shows that are at least being advertised as fantastic. So it's kind of got a few shows that are going to probably stand out in the long run. And then other than that, it's got a bunch of shows that probably can hit home for certain people. And so, yeah, I think this is going to be a very full season, depending on what kind of shows you're into.
And that's not even talking about the returning seasons, because honestly, there's a handful, at least, of returning seasons of some top-tier shows, right?
Right.
So, like you said, I think we've got a lot of fun stuff coming up, and we're excited to talk about them because, you know, it's always good whenever we get some new shows and some old ones too. So I can't wait for the spring season. It kind of already started. We're technically doing this on like the first week of spring, basically. But yeah, it'll. I think we're looking forward to that for sure.
Yep. So I think just to get into it, let's go ahead and get started with our season wrap up for the winter. So this time we've got Solo Leveling. We'll just start off with that. That was the hot shonen anime of the season.
For sure. That was the one that had the biggest hype. And honestly, it had hype for like maybe half a year last year, right? It was kind of pushing. It was like, hey, you know, Solo Leveling, everyone's talking about it. It's definitely getting adapted. People were like, oh, this show is so good. Or this anime is so good. Or manga, excuse me.
Which is so good. Technically manhwa because it's Korean.
That's correct, right? Manhwa.
But anyway,
right. Excuse me. Thank you for correcting me on that. But yeah, people were really excited about it, and I think it got a good following from the beginning. I think, you know, we had our, you know, some gripes here and there really to the story midway through the season when we did a review, but, you know, people were excited, and I think ultimately it delivered. I think it really did do a good job of adapting what it had, the source material, and really getting people interested and, I guess, hyped for the show.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, is that it did exactly what it was supposed to do. This story is not amazing. It's not like anything brand new. In fact, if anything, it's like an isekai that's not really an isekai.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You've kind of got that vibe where if you've seen this story once, you've seen it a million times. In fact, I would argue that the first episode is the only really standout episode, because that's the only one where or first two probably, because that's the only one where you don't start on the trend of, okay, now we just see a guy who's becoming OP. I think the reason I would compare this kind of to Bleach, which is just like, there's a reason we watch Bleach. There's cool stuff happening and the art is really good.
Yep.
And that's basically what Solo Leveling delivers. And frankly, you know, I think 90% of the people who are watching it, that's what they're here for. So yeah, I think it delivered exactly what it was supposed to. And I don't think it's going to set the world on fire. But I do hope it sets up a better options for Korean animation to be become anime in the future.
Yeah, so, adapted.
Adapted, sorry.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was. It definitely wasn't like... This series kind of sum up the whole season where it's like, it doesn't blow me away, but I thought it was solid, you know. I thought the action was really good. I thought the animation was probably the best part. Definitely had really good animation when it got to, you know, the action parts. I mean, even the everyday stuff. I think the character designs were really good. I really enjoyed, you know, how clean everything looked, how, you know, sharp and kind of vibrant the character designs were. And ultimately, it, like you said, it's not really groundbreaking when it comes to a story, but I thought it had good pacing. I thought the action was really good, like I had said earlier. And I think it sets up for some more interesting things in the second season. I think more than anything, it definitely got me on the hook to see where it would go, because it like brought up the whole like history of like that one island that some of the heroes are going to go.
Oh yeah.
To, right? So it's like, oh, that left you on the hook.
That leads into a big arc, yeah.
Right. So I think it did a good job of setting that up. So if there is a season two, I think it will definitely lead to maybe a stronger season. I like the ultimate like power up that Jingwu got. You know, he became a necromancer. I thought that was kind of a cool like
yeah, that's little a different thing, right? Take on
I think that's
something.
Different because like he you know, usually it's like, oh, he's like he plays the good guy, and this is definitely going down kind of a darker road. I'm sure he's not going to be a bad guy. Well, I could be wrong, but I just think that it's just interesting to see that ability, because you usually see that on like the bad guys, right? Like,
right,
oh, they can revive the dead. They're reviving your loved ones.
It brings back some negative connotations when you exactly. think about it. Yeah, yeah.
So I do like that. I did like the power up. I think the last fight was pretty cool against the red, like the red knight that he had to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm more intrigued on where it continues. I definitely think it hooked me, like I said, and I think it did a good job. I mean, we said that basically it did a good job to adapt, and then we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah. All right. Next up, one that we don't have as much praise for, Metallic Rouge. So I don't know. I felt like this one was kind of set up by a schizophrenic because it was all over the place. We have talked about this one before. It kind of gave me the vibes of like a Monster of the Week kind of style thing, because even though the story felt like it was building to something, it was basically always like, we have this goal, then a monster shows up, then we got to fight it, and then we either get to the goal or we move on to the next step of getting to the goal, you know? And that was kind of fine, but the story was very convoluted, very confusing, and kind of messy. I didn't watch to the end, so apparently there's a good twist. You know about that more than I do, Ozzy, because I didn't watch it. But you can go ahead and tell us what your thoughts are kind of on the story as a whole after you watch the ending.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely my most disappointing thing of the season, just because I think I had lots of hype, lots of expectations for this, just because it has decent design from a story aspect. It had decent design from a character aspect. I like the idea that the lead characters were two girls, because, you know, it's just different. And plus, you know, I think it's a little easier to maybe play with the idea of like, oh, they could be, you know, you could have a strong-willed character, you could have a goofy character.
Yeah.
For some reason, it's a little bit more enjoyable when they're female leads. So it was cool to see that. And again, it had the whole like AI robot theme going on. I feel like we've seen a lot of those recently. I know in reality we're dealing with AI issues, quote unquote. Obviously nothing to the extent that you see in anime, but it's interesting how we're seeing a lot of these, you know, like, you know, we saw Pluto, we saw this, even Vivi a couple, you know, years ago, we saw that, right?
Vivi still stands out.
You know, those like whole like robots, you know, the fear of them kind of like rising up, the fear of like us having to control them and stuff like that. So that's basically what the story was about, is, you know, a combination of that and also the fact that the main characters had to like track down these other robots
to stop them from
to stop them. But ultimately, like, you didn't really get the full story until maybe the last half to quarter of the story of the series.
If you want to just give it to us,
and basically,
well,
yeah, I'll, just to give it to you straight, spoilers, right? With this one, is that they ultimately find out that some of the 9 special robots that apparently have like were the original ones, they have the ability, or they're trying to get together to have the ability to overthrow the Asimov's code, which is
Asimov code.
Yeah, which is the code that's in all the robots to basically say you have to follow humans.
That you can't kill humans.
Yeah, you can't kill humans, you can't go against their orders, stuff like that. Basically, it's just like, oh, the end game is that these robots want to get together to, you know, delete this code from all the robots,
so they
have
freedom
to
be free.
Right. And it happens to be that the main character, Rouge, which is, you know, like I said, one of the main robots, is kind of thrown into this, like, oh, I don't know if I want to be a part of this. I'm a robot, but I don't want to hurt people.
And I assume because they're all the colors that she has to also be part
of. Yeah, I'm saying she's part of the nine, right?
Yeah.
So she got thrown into this. But like I said, they have, like, so many parties going on. There's, like, the weird, you know, there's, like, these other, like, robots slash, like, aliens that also want to take over the planet. Obviously the humans, then there's, like, these other robots that, like, align with the aliens. I don't know. A lot of confusion at the end. I really didn't know where they were going. Only until, like, the last episode that I finally understand what was going on. Basically, there was, like, this big twist where, like, the final baddie was this like, weird ringleader circus guy that was in, like, one of the first few episodes.
Yeah, the yellow guy.
No. He's like a jester. No, he was like an actual ringleader of like a circus. Like they showed up and he was just like, he had a mask on. He was kind of big. Turns out he ended up being a robot, but he was the robot of the dead guy who created the original nine robot.
So he's like a clone robot.
Correct, basically. A clone robot. He like uploaded his like being and consciousness into a robot. He was a human at one point. But the whole story was that
I don't care.
Yeah, the whole story was like, oh, he like someone killed him. Oh my God, we have to like fulfill his last wish. His last wish was to
free all robots.
No, his last wish was to like basically destroy the. Well, they were saying that it was to destroy the nine robots. So then at the end, it turns out, oh, he was actually the guy being the ringleader the whole time, controlling everything behind the scenes.
Okay.
And basically what ended up happening is he wanted to be the like the robot to like lead everyone to become like the new rulers of the world. And I'm like, oh, so you just like kind of like offed yourself to be a robot. Okay, cool, I guess. Anyway, it did end up working out, obviously, because shonen things. But yeah, I don't know. It was, like you said, somebody. It's like a schizophrenic wrote this. It was all over the place. The character designs were okay. The action was kind of okay. I mean, definitely like weak monster of the week situation where like, oh, this episode they fight, you know, the fifth robot and he's got a different mechanic.
And I think I would have given it more leeway if the art had been better. Because like the art in Solo Leveling is fantastic. The art in this is kind of just good. It's not like, oh my gosh, look at the stuff they're doing. It's more just like, yeah, I've seen this before. This would have looked good in the 90s. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where I was at with it. I don't think we need to dwell on it much longer. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure if you liked it, it was kind of an interesting idea, but maybe a little convoluted in the execution.
Yeah, I think the execution wasn't there. And, yeah, I don't think it was unenjoyable. And I finished it because I was more intrigued into, like, well, how are they going to wrap this up? And, I can say that it felt a little rushed at the end because of the execution. So, all in all, definitely just kind of fumbled the bag there. All
right. Next up, gushing over Magical Girls.
Tell us all about this, Logan, because I heard that you were gushing real hard every time you watched this.
I didn't watch this at all, but I feel like, I know you watched it, Ozzy, and I feel like you're going to pull a Stanley from The Office. I don't know if you remember that scene from The Office, but there's a scene where, like, somebody takes his, like, little booklet from him and a bunch of hentai spills out. And they're like, why do you have porn in there? And it cuts to him talking to the camera and he's like, it's called hentai and it's art. And it's just like, and I'm like, I feel like there's a bunch of people saying that about this show right now. It's like,
yeah, dude.
It's not porn. It's art.
It's not porn, dude. No, there was never insertion of anything into anything.
Okay, sure. Okay. It's just very etchy. Okay.
Very etchy. So yeah, gushing over Magical Girls. I did watch more of this. I haven't finished it, but I will give a review of the full thing that it surprised me. I can tell you that much. It was definitely like a reach around that I wasn't expecting. It's just one of those things where it's like, I will say, I definitely felt conflicted watching this because I mean, I am a man of the people, but this is very etchy, man. This was real stuff. And they're definitely like schoolgirls, so I just feel conflicted watching it. But outside of the etchy scenes, it was really hilarious. You know, the whole getup is that the main character is like doesn't want to be the villain, and she got like powers that rival the Magical Girls, but she's the villain, so she has to fight her favorite Magical Girls. And then like it plays on her being a dominatrix, like she like basically takes them prisoner and like
does the torture
and like she gets pleasure out of it, but she's like trying to not be that way because she thinks it's weird, but she's like but I'm into it. So,
but she also likes it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really funny. I mean, it's a trope. It's obviously done before, but the way the interactions between the magical girls and the main character, the MC, it's really funny. They introduced two other like villains that were pretty funny as well. They have like, you know, one's like small and like doting and cute, and the other one's like super aggressive, obviously. But again, just funny interactions. I felt weird watching it, like I said, but I just found myself laughing probably the most out of any of these shows all season, just because of the reactions, obviously, just because of, like, you know, as much as the magical girls would have a problem fighting with this, you know, every now and then they crack a joke like, oh, you know, like, you know, it didn't feel bad, like, it's just stuff like that, just like,
yeah,
stuff
that, I did like the manga, so I get what the charm is, but because it is very funny, but it is also very, very intense in some scenes.
Yeah, and like, I'm okay.
And uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable for me, right? And I'm not saying if you watch this, you're gross. But it's just for me, I'm just not comfortable with it. Because they do show like nudity and they draw everything. And like, to me, I would get the gist if it just kind of shaded it a bit and didn't show it. And to me, that's point, that's the extra line that they went further than my comfortableness, I guess.
To your point, they are schoolgirls, which is like probably, I guess it's probably fine in Japan, but over here, that's fucking weird. I don't know.
Yeah, if I got caught watching that by anyone, I'd be in trouble. I'd be in absolute trouble. I couldn't get my way out of this.
All right, so good thing you recorded.
Good thing I did not watch it. Right, I did not watch it. I'm on record saying did not watch it. I recommend it.
To one that you did watch, Buchigiri. So, obviously, I stopped watching this. It was fine. I just didn't get the comedy. It's a little too over the top, and I kind of thought that the main character was kind of either an asshole or a bitch, depending on your perspective. So, Ozzy, I know you watched this. Early on, it was one of your favorites. You are currently massaging your head right now. I don't know if you've got a headache or you just don't want to talk about this show, but you're on deck. Here you go.
I never saw it as one of my favorites. I will say that. I will say I usually pride myself in finding stuff and being like, yeah, I knew this was going to be good before it was good. Not that, you know, other people don't, you know, like I pride myself in, you know, seeing stuff like what's it called? Odd Taxi. I remember being like, oh, that's going to look good. It was. You know, seeing Bochy, and I was like, that's going to look good. And it was. This, I thought it would look good, and it was not. I'm a little bit bummed because this was another one kind of like Metallic Rouge where I was like, you know, this has the makings of possibility, you know, looking good, animated well. This one was definitely, this one had it more going for it than Metallic Rouge by the fact that this one looked much better. This one, character design was much more interesting to me.
Oh, yeah. I will agree with that. The character design was fucking fantastic.
So fun. I was like, oh, this is great. And then, like, the concept of it, you know, it's, like we'll talk about in the next season hype, is that, you know, it's, like, very similar to Windbreakers or, like, you know, like your action shonen high school fighting situation, right? It's basically, you know, that the main character goes to a school where he has, you know, fighting groups that just love to fight. They just love to fight. Like I don't think they did a single thing of school. They just basically fight. And it looks good. The fight action scenes are really interesting because it's not just like over the top stuff. It's, you know, sometimes it's hand to hand combat brawling, you know, fist fighting. So there's a lot of good stuff that can be drawn there and animated. And I think they did do a good job of those, especially with some of the actual fighting characters. Because unfortunately, our MC is just kind of a bitch. He's a bitch. He's not an asshole. I think he holds in a lot of things that I just don't see why he's just holding on to. Like, his main gripe, because I watched most of this, I did drop it just because I got fed up with it, unfortunately. The main character apparently just feels bad because he like, dropped his good friend as a kid because he didn't want to fight. Like, he felt like he couldn't fight, and he just kind of abandoned his friend during a fight. And he felt so bad that he... Like, I don't understand. He
kind of continually abandons his friend.
Yeah, but you think if you did that, you would like
do the opposite.
No, I can understand him not wanting to interact with him, but you think he would avoid him, but be like not aggressive. right?
Right.
Like, you're already a dick to him. Why would you continue being a dick to
him? Yeah, I guess that's where I kind of thought he was being a little bit more of an asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, the friend is, like, so nice
to him. He is super nice. He's like, oh, you're such a cool friend. You're always protecting
me. Yeah, he's always talking up about him.
Yeah, but basically he was like, I abandoned you. I'm sorry. He felt bad. He felt so bad that it made him into an asshole. That doesn't make sense.
It's very strange.
Yeah, so, like, I understand if you avoided him. Like, I don't want to, like, hang out with you because I'm such a terrible friend. No, he's like, stop following me around. Well, look, why are you hanging out with me? Like, because he's nice. And, yeah, you fucked up, but, like, you're okay. Like, you can apologize. And it drug on for, like, 8 episodes where they just didn't confront each other. They never talked about it. He just kept being a bitch the whole time.
I think the other problem that I had with him was just kind of, like, he seemed to almost continuously steer himself into problematic situations where it's just, like, you could just choose... I know there's only, like, one girl at the school, but it's like, you could find somebody else who's not a psycho bitch.
No, but that's
who's
not
obsessed with their brother.
See, I was okay. So that part of it, I actually kind of thought it was funny, and I enjoyed the comedic relief there where, you know, he fell in love with one of the leaders of the fighting gang.
Fighting gang's sister.
And, you know, she's, like, cute. She's probably the only girl there. I think she is the only
girl there. She is the only girl there.
Falls in love with her, but she turns out to be this weird psycho bitch who's, like, kind of into her brother. Oddly.
Very into it.
Yeah, she's like, oh, yeah, my brother's kind of hot, and, you know, he's, like, the best fighter, so I'm, like, in love with my brother. Whatever. I mean, so that dynamic was kind of funny, but, yeah, again, the main character just never really, like, put it together in time for me. Like, I think if the whole arc of him and his, like, ex-best friend, like, was shorter, or maybe it was after we got to see a little bit of the main character get established, it would have been better. But it just dragged on too much. I wasn't as interested. You didn't make me like the main character. The side characters were okay, but not enough to really pull it through. And then again, the main character also wasn't really a good fighter. Like, he depended on the spirit, because that's the whole, like, the Honkai spirits were what kind of pushed him to start fighting again. He was using that spirit to fight, but it was basically just like a KO punch, and he didn't really know what he was doing. And even 8 to 9 episodes in, he still hasn't really done anything to get better at fighting. And it's just like, I don't really... What am I even interested in this MC for? Like, what? There's nothing there. So that's where it fell apart for me. And that's unfortunate, because I still think animation-wise it was fun. The character design was fun. OP was actually one of my favorites. But it just did not put it together.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's Butchigiri.
Next up, so this one you were higher on, A Sign of Affection. Now, I do feel like the only reason I didn't watch this one is it felt like kind of a ripoff of a couple of other anime/manga I've seen, where it's like, it's a deaf person, and somebody falls in love with them, and there's probably some bullying, and some other stuff happens, and then they kind of like come together and... you know, overcome all of their difficulties together. That's pretty much the only reason I didn't watch it, and it might not be entirely the same story, but I was just kind of like, I feel like I have seen this before, but it does sound like it's a fun story, so...
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I can say that as a romance, as a show, it's definitely nothing groundbreaking, but I will say that when it comes to the deaf person kind of trope, and maybe the bullying of, it's not in there, and I did like that. I think the fact that the main character is a deaf person is kind of the driving force of a relationship, but not the driving force of the drama and the story, if that makes sense. Right. I really do think at the root of this, it's a romance, like, not because she's deaf and because he's not. No, it's just a romance. It just helps drive a little bit of the character, like, maybe development and interactions. It's just her being a deaf person, right? So, again, Yuki was the main character. She's deaf, and she falls for this guy who's kind of this traveler, kind of like, you know, cool, edgy guy, Itsumi. But I did finish it. I did enjoy it more than I expected. It got better. I think originally it just felt very, to me, the girl Yuki, and it, she didn't really get better. I just think that the supporting cast got better. My problem with her originally was that she was too, like, innocent. Like, she was a college kid, which is something that I will praise the show for. It is set in a college situation.
Hey, so that's adults, a change of pace.
Everything felt much, but everything just feels so much better from a romance perspective, from a dating perspective, from a, you know, where am I at in my life perspective, experiences. All that's more adult. I really appreciate it for what it was there, and it felt like it dealt with topics in a more adult way. It felt like nothing was uncomfortable in these topics. I applaud that because I love any show that kind of attacks all these things that people love about romances but puts them in a more appropriate situation, which would be adulthood. But basically, she didn't really grow up any. She's basically super innocent. And I don't know how a deaf person would go through their life and maybe be that innocent, so I can't really say that. But if she didn't have the disability, she would be super innocent to me. I mean, this is like insanely innocent. Like, people like travel and go outside Japan. I'm like, yeah, that's normal. People travel, have fun, do stuff, right? Yeah, people know. It is what it is. I mean, they kept her consistent at least. But the supporting characters were really fun. You know, she had her good friend who worked with her and kind of like supported her in growing her relationship with her boyfriend, which they ultimately did get together. Another thing I will applaud is they got together about halfway to about 7 episodes in.
Right.
So it wasn't like, oh, what are we building to? They get together at the end. Gotcha. No, they got together, and then the last half of the season was them just kind of getting to know each other as a couple, experiencing like their first date, experiencing just like, you know, spending time together. And sometimes that stuff isn't shown as much. Sometimes it's just like, oh, they get together and then they're all just like a couple, like normal. But I think, again, the fact that she was deaf kind of pushes the narrative a little bit sometimes, because, you know, they have these situations where, you know, they're hanging out at night at her house or his house, and it's like, you know, she can't hear, so, you know, he may have to, you know, take her home, or he may have to, you know, they can't communicate at dark, so they have to have the lights on. They had a moment where they watched a movie and they turned off the sound because he wanted to experience it like she did, with like no sound, right?
Right.
So things like that. It was interesting. I thought it was cute. Their interactions of the two main characters, Yuki and Itsume, were pretty realistic to an extent. You know, I didn't think it was like over dramatized. She definitely had moments where she was like, you know, very like embarrassed. Like, she didn't really do PDA a lot, and he was more experienced and was like, yeah, it's whatever to me. But I thought it was good. I really did like it. Good romance. I would actually recommend this for people who like romances. I thought it was a good show.
It sounds like a good one. Yeah, I think that's definitely one that maybe everybody should check out if they're into the romance one. Finally, we're going to touch on probably our favorite ones for the season, even though I guess technically one of them was from the previous season.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Delicious in Dungeon. So,
yeah, what do you think, Logan? I know that we were kind of excited for this one early in the season. This one was the one that was done by Trigger.
Yeah. I'm actually, I'm huge on this because it's been a very popular manga for a while, and it's a good comedy. It's kind of hard to describe because I would say that it is a combination of the action comedy genres. I would say it's probably more of a comedy first, but there's some really good action in this show.
Oh, yeah.
And there's definitely a lot of good world building and character building around the whole plot. It's a fantasy world, but it's not a fantasy world that we're probably super familiar with because of how the dungeons are built up and how the kind of the characters and monsters interact with each other. I guess the magic system is also pretty fascinating. The way that you can, like, they talk about building a dungeon almost from
that episode was really good. Really enjoyed the building of a dungeon building. Like, you know, it went about like how it's a microcosm and like how it's built on mana and it's built on a specific person's mana, right? So like someone created this dungeon. And the fact that it's so big means that person is like
basically
a very powerful mage, yeah. Right? So, you know, they showed like a little DIY like dungeon thing at school that one of the main characters was a part of back in the day.
It's also the way that dungeons are almost kind of like batteries in a like organic way.
Yeah, like,
where
they
it's like everything is fueling the earth itself.
Yeah, it's like a power cell.
Yeah. It's fascinating. But yeah, I think you gotta love the interaction between the characters. I think this is just a perfect combination of characters where it's like You've got two absurdists. One's a little more based in reality, but basically two people who are just completely out there. And two people who are more grounded, but are also like, I have to accept the situation I am in, and it's a very strange one to fix all of this stuff. And I just kind of like the way that they feel like they're trying to get through this really tough situation and kind of fix things, but they always kind of run into problems and run into struggles that make everything much more funnier. And I think it's also, it helps if you've ever played D&D before, because even though this is kind of a different world, a lot of the problems that they run into are very, like, D&D-esque. Like, mimics make a big appearance in here. There's a lot of traps and a lot of, how does this material work? What is this equipment, you know?
Yeah, it's got those Easter eggs. It's nice. Like, yeah, when you know it, you're like, you kind of chuckle to yourself and you're like, oh, it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Throwback.
But I think overall, I think I just enjoyed getting lost in the world. The comedy really helped, but early on, that's what I was there for. But as the story went on, it just became more and more about enjoying myself and spending time with these characters. And I think whenever you've got that situation, it's a fucking knock it out of the park. So,
I mean, for me especially, yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're into. If you're into just like a little bit more pure action, or maybe you're looking for a little bit more back and forth, then you're not really going to get that here. There's episodes where you get that, but as a whole, it's the pacing's a little different. You know, I kind of compare this to, you know, Frerin a little bit, where it's like a Frerin light. You know, you'll have episodes where every episode has its challenges, but it might just be like, oh, how do we deal with, you know, with these characters that we've encountered? And the next challenge might be like, how do we get out of this alive? It might just be like,
it might just be a straight up fight. And it is right. Also, it's also fascinating because, you know, you see every other character, as the story goes on, you keep meeting new characters, and every other character feels like they've got their own problems that they're dealing with.
Yeah,
I really liked when they stumbled upon the orcs, and one of the guys trades with the orcs, but the orcs are like, well, we're in a really bad situation right now.
They weren't just a device for drama.
So fuck you, really, we got to steal from you.
Yeah,
so
it gave them a little bit more. That's world building, right?
And
this does a good job of world building, of building that fantasy narrative that you're talking about, that it's really enjoyable to watch because of, you know, just how good it feels because of our background of, you know, liking fantasy, of liking maybe some D&D aspects, of liking, you know, adventures, right? And this has all that all those aspects. But yeah, it looks great. I think that Trigger definitely knocked it out of the park when it comes to visuals. You know, it was a little slow up front. I will say that the pacing was much better after maybe four or five episodes. It started to push, like, because I think sometimes you forget what their main mission was, which was to save his sister, Lyo's sister, who was, you know,
I will say
eaten by the red dragon.
For something that was, I mean, I know it takes a long time for the dragon to digest, but they sure felt like they were taking their time getting there.
Right. I feel like the pacing was a little slow in, like, episode four or five, but then once it kind of got back on track, it delivered because it finally got to that climax. And then when we did encounter the red dragon, the animation was awesome. It had a little bit of triggerness to it where, like, you know, when it got a little chaotic or dramatic, it got a little edgy, and I loved it. It's very characteristic Trigger, and I absolutely love it. I got to see it in the episode where they fought the red dragon. I think there were two episodes. I really enjoyed that. When it got to the action, it actually showed off. But again, most of the time, it's just enjoying the character interactions, enjoying the world itself, enjoying the animals and the food. Let's not forget about the food.
Food looks fantastic.
You know, the food looks awesome, man. I mean, there was one where they made a pizza, and I was like, fuck, I want some pizza now.
They got to make a cookbook. This is ridiculous.
I know, that would be pretty sweet. Yeah. Oh, when does, what's his name, make an episode of this? Babish.
Oh, yeah, Benching with Babish.
Can Babish do an episode of
I think they're probably going to do a few, yeah.
That would be so cool. But, one of my favorites, it grew on me, and it grew, like I said, I think it probably was my favorite of this season.
I think it's
alone.
It's a must watch. Yeah, you gotta watch this.
It's definitely fun. I was excited because of Trigger, and I think Trigger delivered.
Yeah. All right, next up is Frerin.
What do we need to say?
I don't think we need to touch on this too much. We've been sucking Frerin's dick for like
the past. I feel like the dick got bigger.
Yeah, it's just like, oh man, it got out of hand at the.
No, it got out of mouth, man.
Yeah, it was just like, it was too much. Oh man.
Yeah, so Frerin, we're not going to spend more than 30 seconds just basically saying it's a continuation of the story.
Watch the fucking show. Watch it.
And you know what? The show, how good it is, You know what people always say, what makes a good show, what makes a good show, but you know what helps a good show? Like, what kind of arc helps a good show? A tournament arc. And guess what we get? We basically get a mini tournament.
We got a little mini tournament arc. And it wasn't even that much of a tournament. It was a tournament, but it wasn't how I would picture a tournament.
Right. It's a majors tournament, right? So it's not like 1v1. It's a competition, basically.
But, yeah, I think a competition.
But that's the best we're going to get for this kind of show. And
fucking Dankin. I love Dankin at the end. It's like, I cast Fist, motherfucker.
It's so good. Like, yeah, you get to introduce, like, the best things of a tournament is you get to introduce new characters. Did that, and it did it well. A bunch of fun characters, a bunch of fun new abilities. You get to see new abilities, people using different techniques on each other. You got to see all that, and that shit was awesome.
Like, I think it speaks volumes that this show finally dethroned FMA Brotherhood at the top of the MAL list. It's just, it got that higher ranking. Like, dude, it... Go watch it. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. We just said the Delition in Dungeon is like a must watch. This goes beyond a must watch. This is a like, stop listening to this podcast right now and go watch.
Yeah, this is a missing out on a, you know, one of those animes that just sticks for years. Like, if you're missing out on it, you're missing out on what everyone's talking about. And I think this is just one that you can't miss out because it's so enjoyable. You know, if the last season maybe you were hoping for more action, you're going to get it this season, or the second half of the season. You're getting it this season for sure. Yeah. You know, if you enjoyed more of the wholesome, like, everyday, like, action, not action, but just everyday, like, cute stuff, you get a little bit of less of that. But they still did each one well. It's still a good balance across the whole season. And, man, by the end of the season, because it actually is over, I mean, I was just, it was probably like, it's that bittersweet goodbye where you're like, man, this was so good, but I hate to see
it
go.
It even did the goodbye well. That's fucking crazy.
So, yeah, nope, Brandon did it right.
Okay, so, spring season hype. We just touched on this. There's like a shit ton of shows.
There's a good amount, but I'm hoping it's not like winter where we have a good amount and half of them end up panning out, which I just made the realization that winter of last year was also kind of slow. So I don't know if it's a winter thing or maybe possibly. I don't know.
We'll see, but spring's got definitely some opportunities. I mean, that is kind of also an American where it's like you just don't have as many stuff in the fall or the winter, and then it all picks up back in the spring and the summer. Anyway, back to our topic. With the spring season coming up, we got a lot of sequels coming out, and we got a lot of new stuff. So if we miss something, apologies. You can shoot us an email. We'll check it out, RaleighAnime@gmail.com. And if otherwise, we're going to burn through some of these sequels probably because I just don't think we have a lot to say about them. But starting off, Konosuba Season 3.
If you're into it, you're into it.
We haven't watched it. It's very funny. It also has a pervert in an isekai in another world. We got another one of those on the list, so we'll see how that goes. All right, Demon Slayer.
Season 4.
It's fucking Demon Slayer.
Yeah. It is a training arc, so there is... I mean, to me, that's less hype. You have to show these arcs. I think it might even be like a mini movie. I don't remember how this one works. But basically, it's them preparing for the continuation of, having to fight against the Upper Moons.
I will say that the training arcs have been one of the more disappointing things on the series, but I'm hoping for more comedy out of it, and I'm sure it's going to have some fantastic art, and it's probably going to win a lot of awards. But, yay. I mean, as Demon Slayer, everybody who's anybody probably knows what's up. Reincarnated in a Slime Season 3. It's kind of crazy that this thing has gotten 3 seasons, I'll be honest. I didn't expect it to be as popular as it is.
I definitely expected a Season 2, right? Season 1, I really enjoyed. This is one of the isekais that just kind of stuck with me. I guess it was just kind of silly. I mean, being reincarnated as a, random object isn't necessarily a new thing. But I think the world building here, the characters,
So you're saying the vending machine one's getting like 4 seasons.
That one fucking sucks. If that one comes back, I swear.
I do want the sword one to come back.
Anyway, that one wasn't bad. But yeah, no, it's continuing. People really enjoy this one. I've seen some of the clips of the fights and just the animations, and it looks good. I do like, you know, I always did enjoy the mix of like magic and like physical action that's in this, because there are some sword wielders, and it just looks good. So I can see why people really enjoy this. I don't really know where it's at because I did not continue with season two, so it's probably not a watch for me.
Fair enough. I'm not going to watch it either, but I think it's good to know that it's out there. I've just got don't have enough time to waste on sequels at this point. Sound Euphonium, Season 3. Ozzy, you added this to the list.
Yeah, this is a big one for me. I love Sound Euphonium. Sound Euphonium, I think a lot of people know about because it's Kyo Annie, right? I mean, they put out some high-quality stuff, so... But this one is centered around music, but not, you know, a rock band like most people think. It's centered around like a wind ensemble, a orchestra in middle school. I want to say that they might be high schoolers. High schoolers. So basically they are competing and, you know, they're trying to better themselves. Because if anyone has any background in music, you know that. You know, there are, auditions to be part of ensembles. And if you make it, then that's great. And then you continue with that band to try to compete at competitions. And that's something that I grew up on. I played in a wind ensemble basically from like sixth grade to all the way through high school, through college. And I loved every single bit of it. I loved competing. I loved getting better at playing music. And that's the driving force of this show is them not just playing and being friends, but, you know, the main character, she wants to be better. She wants to better herself. They do a good job of showing how she does better herself. And it just rings too true to home to me that I just cannot not watch this show. On top of the fact that the music is great and the fact that the animation is out of this world. So good. It is very girly, cute girls doing cute things, but it does focus on the actual aspects of music and, you know, the action behind it, right? So
I will say I have seen some of the clips of the art, and it is fantastic. Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
It's just I love this show.
All right, and last up we got Mushoku Tensei, which is a show we've both been following for a while.
We love perverts.
Gosh, yeah, isekai perverts, like, it's just right up our alley apparently.
But yeah, we're continuing. It just left off not this past season, but the season before, where, you know, Rudy finally met up with Sophie, right?
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Rudy got his groove back. We're finished with the school arc. So now they're adults and they're figuring out their stuff. But also I think we're on the verge of Rudy is formally going to start searching again for his family. So I'm expecting more action this season. Would
more
make sense.
More action, right?
And that's great, honestly, because this show has been really good when it gets into the action scenes.
And it felt like last season it was missing that, right? Not in a bad way, but it's just like there wasn't present.
It had some very early on,
yep.
And then it just kind of petered out.
Yeah. Right, but I mean, this is one of those shows where it doesn't need it. You know, it's kind of like Vinland Saga, where like it could literally spend a whole season building up a character and figuring out the character, and I would slob on its knob all day.
True story, but... I do also just love the comedy they work in, and yeah. I guess even though the characters are ridiculous, I think they're ridiculous in a fun and enjoyable way.
Yeah.
Did I say ridiculous? I meant highly perverted. But anyway, so yeah, I think that's a fair summation. Next up, all right, into the actual new stuff that is coming out this season. So, Ozzy, you looked up quite a few of these. You're going to have to help me out. Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night. By Studio Doga Kobo, who also did Oshinoko.
Yeah, that's a big name right there. So you hear that and you think, oh, that's cool. Obviously, not in the same realm of things, but this one, the next, Sound Euphonium and these next two, they're kind of like the cute girl casual thing feel that I always like to do. You know, sometimes I see. You know, a group of girls, and I look at them, and you know, they say, "Oh, they're just trying to figure stuff out," or they're doing this activity, and I'm like, "Oh, that's interesting. Let's do it. Let's check it out." And it doesn't help that this also looks really good. The animation looks very good. The character designs look fun because it's about these four random girls that don't really know each other. They're all from different parts of life. They're all in, like, I think Tokyo, maybe Japan. Basically at night, and they just kind of like get together and decide to form a group. I know one of them's like an idol, one of them's a YouTuber or VTuber.
According to the plot, it's a former idol, an illustrator who stops drawing, a self-proclaimed the strongest VTuber.
VTuber, that's right.
It's not a YouTuber. A mysterious composer who wants to support and form a anonymous artist group called Jale.
Yeah. So, yeah, they form a group, and, so
Now, really quick, tell me, can jellyfish not swim in the night? I'm actually kind of curious.
That's when they sleep.
Really?
I'm just kidding.
Well, they just fucking float there. Anyway.
But, is that not swimming? Is floating not swimming?
That's what I'm fucking asking. Anyway.
I don't know. But I guess we'll find out. But, yeah, so this one, interesting. Definitely, the animation looks as good, style-wise, as Oshinoko. It's not the same design, but... It just looks clean, very vibrant, and I'm excited to check it out.
It looks really good, just to be honest. And if they did Oshinoko, that means they've also already done something with like idol groups. So that seems promising. But yeah, that sounds really good. Next up, we've got Train to the End of the World, and I just by Studio EM Squared, EMT Squared, which I don't have any record of what they've done in the past. I'm just now looking up the plot of this, and it sounds completely ridiculous. But you said that that's the case with the first episode.
Yeah, the first episode,
drops back down to reality, I guess.
A little bit. It's just not what I was expecting. So based off some of the clips that I saw, it just seems like another kind of cute girls on a mission kind of situation. But there's some adventuring in it. There's trains in it, which it looks cool. The animation looked very good as well. I don't know anything from EMT Squared. But I don't know. It just the character designs look funny.
Shot on the COVID thing?
I don't know. So basically what the first episode basically shot out was it was way more funny than I expected. The first episode, basically some guy comes up. He's like, hey, you know, we're trying to do this new thing for Japan. We're trying to be the leading people in data. And Wi-Fi and sharing energy and sharing information across space. So instead of 5G, we're now skipping 6G. We're going to 7G.
Seven whole Gs.
Yes. So this guy is like...
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but this guy's like churching it up. He gets one of the main girls and he's like, hey, we're ready to instill the 7G across all of Japan. Here's this awesome gold button. Press it. And you're like, what? It says 7G.
Press it. And it activates the 7G.
So she presses a button, and then shit just starts going crazy, dude. Animation style just starts popping off. Like, the world starts, like, messing up. And then they cut to the present day, I think that was a couple weeks later. There's every different town had something different happen to them.
Oh, yeah.
The main town that's in the beginning, all the adults, after they turn 15, they turn into animals. But
yeah,
they can still talk.
I see that. It's like it's got different effects on different people. So are these people in the town, they're in the animal town where they turn into animals?
The girls that are main characters start out in the animal town, yes. They're from that town. And they're not 15 yet, so they can't turn into animals.
Interesting. Okay.
So they're on a mission to find the main girl that was the one that pressed the 7G button because she's like missing. She's gone. Mm-hmm. So they get on this train. But I was not expecting the weird, kooky, like, people turn into animals and the world was, like, completely misshapen.
It sounds fucking ridiculous.
But, yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to have to watch it now. Next up on the list, Spice and Wolf from Studio Passion.
Passion.
Who animated Maruko-chan.
Yeah.
This is a remake of a remake of a remake. I swear Spice and Wolf has been remade like 5 times. And it's a great show, and it's a fun show to if you want to learn about basic economy. But, how many times are they going to remake this fucking show?
All I know is that it's coming back out now, and it looks pretty solid. I mean, the animation isn't, like, out of this world, but it just looks, you know, more modern. And I've heard good things about this series as a whole, so I'm going to watch it just to have some kind of...
it's background. It's a great series. This might be another one where I just don't watch it because I watch, you know, the original. But it's a great series. If you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it.
Nice.
I think it says something that they've remade it 7 times.
It's so good. You could see it 7 times and not get bored.
All right. Next up, one that hasn't been remade before. Grandma and Grandpa Turn Young Again by Studio Gecko, who we could not find anything by them.
So Grandma and Grandpa relive their libido. Regain their libido.
Is that what the actual title is?
No, I'm just joking.
That is something that happens in the first episode.
Hell yeah. I mean, you're telling me that if you're old and you got revived to your younger age, you wouldn't be fucking like rabbits?
I will say, yeah, that is like the first thing that Grandpa does. I will say that is like one of the weird things about this show is it is like oddly sexual. They're like, because as soon as they get, they're young again, they're like, oh man, we can do all the things we can't do when we're older. And I will say that it kind of makes me uncomfortable because some of the family members also start like, oh, Grandpa, you're looking fucking good. Like, okay, this is weird.
What's up, Grandpa?
But, yeah, I think it's kind of, it is, if you ignore that factor, or if you think that factor is hilarious, which is also a possibility, like, this is a really funny show, and it's a cute idea where it's just kind of like, I know I just talked about all the sexual parts, but it's like, it's actually pretty wholesome, you know? It's like old people and they're just helping out other old people the way they would. And also, I think there is an aspect of comedy in how they talk, because obviously they're older people, they're very formal, they talk in a specific way, and all these young people are trying to like, you know, talk to them like normal people and all this. It's like, or
yeah, because they just regain their youth. They don't necessarily go back in time. They're still in the present day.
Yeah, they're right? Still in the present day. They just got younger again through magic. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting show. I will say, as far as story goes, I think later on there's sort of a story, but for the most part, this is just straight up gag, day to day. Slice of life kind of stuff. And I like it. If you're into that, I think this is worth checking out. Next up, Black Butler Public School Arc.
Oh, this is a returning one.
By Studio Cloverworks, which is Spy Family, who did Spy Family and Bochy. Yeah, technically Black Butler is a returning show, but it hasn't... It's been out of the population for like 10 years now, it feels like. So it kind of cut off mid-story and is coming back. I guess general plot... It was very popular when it was out. I don't really know what happened, if it was a creator thing. But general plot... Basically, this kid ends up basically with a demon butler after his family gets killed and he has to find a way out of it. And... So now he and the butler are basically indebted to the queen, or I guess are like secret agents for the Queen of England. And they have to do stuff like investigate people or kill people or figure stuff out. In this case, I think there's like some kind of either coup going on against the crown at this public school, or somebody selling something illegal. I don't remember the story exactly, but that's basically, this arc is picking up from where the story left off, and I'm kind of curious to see what it does. Also, Cloverworks has done very good animation in the past, so I trust them to kind of carry this through with a good atmosphere, with good fights and good action. So, we'll see. I've always kind of had a soft spot in my heart for this story, even though it got a little wild at the end. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the adaptation holds and if it can regain popularity. Ozzy, any thoughts?
No, I mean, I don't know anything about this one. It always, the design of the character seems a little edgier than I'm used to, than I'm kind of into. So it's not something that I was right off the bat. But the way you described it, the whole, like, you know, investigating stuff, maybe like, you know, the fact that they're involved with like the Queen of England, like, I don't know, it just sounds interesting. So
yeah, I think it's got a lot of layers. Next up, Archdemon's Dilemma, How to Love Your Elf Bride.
Speaking of sounding not interesting.
So, Studio Brainsbase, who did To Your Eternity and Baccano, which is pretty action-heavy kind of studios. This is basically the story of this quote-unquote demon lord. He's basically a mage in a world where mages are considered evil. He's not really a bad guy necessarily. He's just kind of like blunt and kind of like, I just do what I need to get by and I don't care about anybody else. Well, he falls in love at first sight with this elf who is being auctioned off, and basically he spends all his money on her, and she doesn't realize, she thinks he's going to sacrifice her, and he is actually in love with her, and hijinks ensue. There is, basically it sounds like a comedy manga when I describe it like that, but there is a fair amount of action in the show, a lot of fighting, and for Ozzy, there's a lot of ecchi stuff, and it's not an isekai. So, you know, there you go. That's hitting all his boxes there. I really like this manga, and it kind of goes off the rails at certain points, but at least for the start, I'm enjoying what I've seen so far, and the animation is pretty good. So, check that one out. Unnamed Memory by Studio Not Gonna Lie, with Uzaki, who also did Uzaki-chan, or is it Nagi?
Nagi.
Nagi. Oh, I'm sorry, did you want to talk about the other one?
It's NGI. No, you're right.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about the other one?
No, you're good. That's all you, man. I'm not going to watch that shit.
Okay. Unnamed Memory is basically the story of a cursed prince who... Well, you're reading the synopsis right now.
Yeah, I'll read it off. So,
go for it.
He climbs a deadly tower, this prince, to seek the power of its master, the Witch of the Azure Moon. He's basically hoping that her incredible magic can break a curse that can kill any woman he takes for a wife. Unfortunately, when he sees this witch at the top of the tower, she's so beautiful, and he has a better idea that she should just marry him because apparently she's so powerful. But yeah, so they end up getting together, but the witch isn't so into the whole marrying thing. Apparently she's wanting to just research the spell to help the prince. But basically she has a dark past, and it comes back, and secrets start to resurface. So Tinasha's the witch, and then Farsus is the main character. That's the prince. It looks kind of like a romance. It is detailed as a romance adventure fantasy. So that part sounds pretty cool. I like the character designs. I've seen some clips of this. And, I've heard that the character interactions between the two MCs, the guys that are, you know, supposed to fall for each other, are pretty, pretty good. Like,
yeah.
People are praising this as like, oh, you know, their interactions are cute, fun, you know, wholesome. So I'm interested in this.
Yeah, I would say that this is a surprisingly deep show. I liked the first episode. Worst thing I can think of to say is there was some wonky CG art. But other than that, I mean, I like the characters, I like the idea of the story, I like to see where this is going. So I think this is worth checking out if you want to give it a go. Next up, Astronote by Studio Telecom Animation, who did Nagatoro.
Yeah.
So Astronote is an interesting one where it's basically about a gifted chef who was let go from his job, and he lands a gig at an old boarding house, but hesitates to accept after learning that he must live there full time until he meets the charming caretaker, Mira Gotokuji, and then he decides he's going to stay. Also, Mira is an alien, and I think most of the boarding house people are also aliens.
It's so funny because, like, I read someone was describing the premise to me without the alien part, and I was like, "Oh, okay, sounds kind of cute." And they describe some of the characters because there's like this like dad who's like a deadbeat who apparently is just kind of funny.
Oh yes,
yeah. And then like obviously the guy's like falling for the main caretaker Mira. So I was like, "Oh, this sounds like it'd be kind of funny." The characters would be like, you know, they come in and kind of gaggy, and it would be cute for romance. But then it threw the curveball with her being an alien. She's a princess alien.
Yes, she's a princess alien. I think there's a war going on of some kind.
Yeah, she's basically
escaping. Yeah. But, you know.
She has a talking poodle, too, I was told.
It kind of reminds me of some gag stuff from the 90s, you know, where it's like, oh, there's a romance, but also there's aliens and it's crazy. Tenchi Muyo kind of comes to mind. Love Hina kind of comes to mind. I wouldn't say this one doesn't feel as pervy as those, but it's definitely got some of a similar, like, you're a fish out of water kind of gags involved with it. So, but it looks fun. I am interested, and it is probably one of the better comedies that are lined up this season. So, take a look at that one. Next up, it's our shonen run of the season! Alright, Kaiju number 8 by Production IG, who did Attack on Titan. I will say, starting off, the art itself is reminiscent of Attack on Titan. It's actually pretty high quality, especially the backgrounds. And this is basically the story of this guy who had given up on being in the self-defense force, because we live in a world where kaijus show up, go figure. He wanted to be in the self-defense force to basically prevent kaijus from attacking. He was never good enough, and now he cleans up kaiju body parts after fights. And somehow he turns into a kaiju, and now he's trying to, I guess, get into the self-defense force, or at least not get killed by them and be a superhero like he always wanted to. Is that
that's basically it, man.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, so it gets interesting because, like you said, he becomes a kaiju, he gains the powers of a kaiju.
I guess he's still a humanoid, so yeah, to say that he is a kaiju is a stretch.
I mean, he looks like a kaiju, but he's like a humanoid kaiju, where he keeps his human body, but he has like an exterior, like exoskeleton of a kaiju.
Basically. He's like a Power Rangers villain. He looks like a fucking...
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But apparently he has the abilities to, you know, probably like... I've seen a couple clips where he gains like things that like protrude from his body. Just like you think a kaiju would. And I'm all for this show because I love kaijus. I love Godzilla. I love just monsters. Monster of the Week kind of situation. It reminds me of Power Rangers, Sentai stuff. So, really hyped for this. The animation looks really good. Super excited to see, you know, what the story entails, because I did know that the guy gains, you know, these powers, and then it's like, oh, well, now he's going to be the hunted, but he also wants to continue fighting kaijus. And it's like, where did this power come from? You know, there's a lot of, like, things that are left open. And also, there's an extra layer of, like, the main character, apparently also his like, main love interest / best friend growing up is like the top tier self-defense member.
Hunter
member. So there's that connection too that makes it a little more you know, interesting. So I mean, add to the fact that it's gonna look great because studio IG, right?
Yeah.
Or IG Productions or whatever, you know their backgrounds are going to be great. I mean, since it's based in a city, there's a lot of destruction, a lot of rubble, a lot of, you know, fallen buildings. And if that shit looks good, that stuff's looking, it's gonna look great overall. Yeah,
the dead kaiju corpses. You know, I was like, I never thought I would appreciate the entrails of a kaiju look, but it does. It looks really good.
It does.
It kind of reminds me of, oh God, what was that movie? Pacific Rim. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Man, this feels like really good like that. But yeah, great show. I think this is one that you have to check out. So take a look at that. Next up, we have Windbreaker by Studio Cloverworks. We covered them. They did Spy Family and Bocchi the Rock. So Ozzy, you've kind of done more of a deep dive into this. The thing that I took away was it's like the main character is a perfectionist, then he decides he wants to ride bikes, and then he gets into fights with gangs. Is that, like, that sounded like what I read.
Where did the bike thing come from?
That's what it literally said that in the synopsis. It's like, he decided he wanted to ride bikes, and now he's fighting gangs. And I was like, alright, interesting enough. But yeah, that's what I got from
Windbreaker. Well, the synopsis from Crunchy, Mal is basically saying that the main character, Haruka Sakura, kind of a terrible name, he wants nothing to do with weaklings. He's only interested in the strongest of the strong. He goes to this new school that's full of degenerates, and they're known for their battling strength. And that's the only thing that they care about is strength. And apparently he just wants to get to the top by fighting his way to the top.
You know what? Maybe I was looking at a different Windbreaker.
You're talking about Air Gear.
No.
Instead of bikes, they're Skates.
Nope. I was looking at Windbreaker. There's different Windbreakers. But anyway, so yeah.
So he just... So it's basically your classic MC is loves to fight. He's probably OP. He's going to beat the shit out of people because that's the thing to do. And from the clips I've seen, it looks good. It's got a good, like, School of Cool kind of situation going where, like, the MC has his, like, half black, half white hair looking. I mean, it just... It looks super shonen-y. We put this on here because I think people are really going to enjoy this. Because of the shonen aspects, I look at it and I kind of just, it's like, whatever, man. I mean, I'll probably watch it. I might end up liking it for, but I'm kind of over the main character being like, you know, like, it's just like, I don't know. Like, Luchigiri, like, at least it didn't have that trope, but it just, it went the other way a little too hard. But it basically feels like Luchigiri where people just want to fight and they're just going to fight. And it's just like, okay, well, what's the story here? I don't know.
I will say I did like the way that they look. The character designs are very
character cool. Design, that's what I'm saying. They have the whole School of Cool thing.
Like, and it feels very colorful. Yeah,
yeah, the atmosphere looks good. The, you know, the uniforms look good because they're in school. I don't know. We'll see what it looks like.
All right. And last but not least, Go-Go Loser Ranger by Studio YoStar Pictures, who did Arknights. You know, for the guys who did Arknights, I was surprised at how good the animation is. This show is pretty fucking good. It's kind of hard to describe, but basically you're dealing with a Power Rangers scenario, except the Power Rangers have already won.
Yeah,
and now they defeated the evil forces. And now they're essentially using what's left of the evil minions to kind of play out battles to kind of make themselves the heroes and stay on top. And obviously what we're dealing with is one of the minions of the bad guys decides he's not going to take it anymore and starts fighting back. But unfortunately, he is too weak to take on these guys. So he's kind of going through some subterfuge to try and figure out, okay, how can I take down these guys and free, you know, be free and free my friends from this oppression? And I'll be honest, I think there's a lot more political in there. There's a lot more subterfuge. It's not as much of a fighting head-on kind of anime. So I don't even know if it's really shonen-esque, but it's a fun show with entertaining characters and really good designs, honestly. Yeah, really good. So yeah, I guess that's my take.
Yeah,
right? I would say this one's great.
It definitely hits some of my favorite things growing up, like the Sentai thing. You know, I love, you know, Power Rangers. I love, you know, that we get a twist on Power Rangers. It's not just like, oh, it's not, you know, just Power Rangers straight up, or not Power Rangers falling in love, which we've seen before. It's, you know, we're looking at it from the eyes of the bad guys, but not just like the main bad guys. It's these, you know, the scrubs, right? And, you know, it's funny because, like you said, they already beat the main villains, and they're just kind of, like, using these scrubs as continuing, like, propaganda for the right. Power Rangers, right? They're like, hey, you know, we beat them every Sunday. Come make sure that you support us.
Come check it out. Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, they're making fun of that. And, you know, they actually do have some comedy back and forth between the scrubs and getting to see their interactions. So like, oh, you know, we're just here for play, you know, and... You know, the one of them, like you said, has like this realization. Like, he's like, I'm kind of over this. And, you know, kind of getting to see where that's going to lead to will be interesting. The animation's been great. Again, I love the whole Sentai thing. I like, you know, the world that they've built of just like, you know, it's not really like anything unique. It's just, you know, Sentai. You know, it's just Power Rangers, right? But getting to see that, like I said, it did look good. The first episode I watched, you know, it had all the classic like Power Rangers thing where they each had their weapons. They like summoned like this one big, you know, weapon together and blasted the bad guys away.
Yeah.
Love to see that. I love to see like the Monster of the Week situation where they had like the big like first like lion tiger looking thing. I don't know. It just made me chuckle. It looked good. I'm interested. I'm super interested. I think this could definitely be one of my favorites of the season if it has the building story.
Yeah, I will say it does seem to be getting darker after the second episode, but I think that's a good thing. So we'll see where it goes. I'm looking forward to it. And at the moment, that's all we got, unless you got another one up your sleeve.
So. Yeah, there's a few that were kind of like, oh, these could be interesting, but I kind of left them off just for the sake of time. But, you know, they might pop off and might be in our mid-season review, but we'll see how we dwindled it down because there is no way we can watch this much.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them will disappoint. Maybe they'll all be on here in the future, but It'll be a fun season for sure.
Yep, we'll definitely see how that goes. All right. Next, last but not least, we have our manga review of the week. So this week we reviewed, I don't actually know what the title is. I just call it Shark Isekai.
It's something like Isekai, something Same. Is it same Same, right?
Yeah, Same. Because
that's the name.
Which
of
is
the
shark. Yeah.
No, well, Same means kill, destroy.
Oh, I thought Same just meant shark in Japanese. But
oh, really? I thought I saw like an explanation that Sa and Mei is literally kill, destroy.
It's destroy. Well, maybe it's like together.
Oh, maybe together. Yeah, maybe. And you might be right. Yeah.
Killer, destroyer. But yeah, I don't know. So, how do I fucking describe this?
I'll describe it.
Go for it.
So, it's basically, we're in this world where a magical world, fantasy world, where the devil or
the
like
demon lord's
army is out loose, whatever. And the main like party or the main like group organization that's trying to battle against these people are summoners. What they'll do is they'll summon familiars to fight in their stead, to fight with them. And our main character, who is this cute young blonde lady, she's basically trying to summon a familiar. They introduce her as being kind of like maybe played upon because at first she couldn't summon a familiar. She had tried multiple times, but basically she was at her wit's end and she finally had to, another test and they're like, hey, you got to summon a familiar. Well, she goes to summon a familiar and she summons in the middle of a room a shark.
Yeah, but it's not like an intense shark. She summons like a really cute looking shark. At least,
yeah, imagine baby shark.
Yeah, yeah, and honestly, it kind of looks like a pool inflatable. Like,
yeah, it's just like a cute shark with like big cute doe eyes, whatever. So it's sitting there. People are laughing her face off, and then all of a sudden, this shark goes beast mode, and I mean like
this shark hates normies.
I
don't know if normies is a thing over there, but basically like. I guess because she's an outcast, like, when all these people start mocking her and, like, one of them is, like, about to make out with its familiar. I don't know what's going on there, but, yeah, one of them, the shark just fucking loses it and just murders
her entire class.
Everybody. Oh,
so,
my God.
I wasn't expecting that. I will say that, but basically it's a story of her just coming to terms with her new familiar being this murderous shark. For whenever it goes beast mode, but whenever it has its normal mode, it's a cute, inflatable-looking shark.
Yeah, and I think
and then you're thinking, oh, what? How does it swim? It swims in the ground. It just swims like as if the ground was water. It just don't ask questions. If you ask too many questions, it won't make sense.
Yeah, I also love that like they say that like yeah, something is based on visualization, and unfortunately, she accidentally watches like a bunch of like. Sharknado and like shark movies, and that's what like
and there you go
leads to her summoning this super shark. This that, ultra powerful like level 800
strongest motherfucker, as they said.
That is literally the first page, the story about the strongest motherfucker. I like
and yeah, no, and it's not just a shark. When it goes beast mode, it's a three-headed shark with tentacles,
with like octopus tentacles, like this.
And we're talking like a monster shark, not like oh a great white. No, this is like the size of like Megalodon.
Yeah.
Like if you take the Meg, put three of them together and give them like
octopus
tentacles. Yeah, that's its beast mode. So, yeah, and it's just kind of like every episode or every chapter so far that I've read, it's like different encounters. And it always ends up like with the shark just chewing
flipping the fuck out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I laughed a lot. Reading this because they didn't hold back in certain situations. They had a little short cut scene where the demon's army, they had like two scrubs that were just kind of, they were like about to fuck. And then the shark comes out of nowhere and attacks them. And it's just kind of hilarious. I don't know. It was just out of left field.
I guess the reason I picked this manga was because A, the premise is fucking ridiculous. B, this is a good case of, like, I don't know if it's actually written this way or if the translator is just, like, this story is ridiculous, so I'm just going to fucking have a good time with it. Because, like, I think even before the first page comes out, the translator's like, this story is just jump shark, so I'm just going to have fun with it.
Definitely had fun. I mean, I feel like every situation ends up being a comedic, like, relief slash...
a reason for the shark to, like, basically go beast mode. Because, like one of the early chapters, the MC finds herself in this village where they took care of her because she was unconscious, I think, after a battle. And by the end of the chapter, you find out that they end up sacrificing her to the Demon Lord army, because that's a daily or annual thing where it's like any newcomers to the village have to be sacrificed, and, you know, the demon army won't destroy that village. And it's just like, it gives the shark a reason to hate the village. It's like, oh, well, fuck that group. Or, like, she saves a hero group early on because they got captured by the demon army, and then the hero group ends up being a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
And then they get their faces chewed off.
But I think that's also part of it, is, like, the shark actually likes the character. It's just that the character seems actually almost okay with getting abused, but maybe the shark is a representative of her internal thoughts of just being like, man, fuck these people. Like, treat me like shit.
It could be it, too. Like, she connects with her on a different level where it's like, hey, you should defend your... Like, why are you letting people treat you like this, you know?
Yeah.
Because she gets kind of like ditzy, like, you know, she... It's not that she's okay with it, but she's just, like, forgiving of it, right?
Yeah, she's almost like, well, this is where I'm at. Yeah, so I might as well just roll with it, I guess. So, yeah.
It's funny. I see this, and I think, like, this could be very, like... I could see this animated to a kind of like a One Punch Man situation where, like, there's goofy characters, there's goofy moments. Obviously, there's the shark. But then when, you know, shit hits the fan, the shark turns beast mode, turns into the Sharknado mode. The animation, the Sakuga could be out of this world. You could see some really cool action. Like, the one chapter where she fights, like, that harpy, one of the admiral, general,
yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Like, shit was popping off. Like, she was throwing, like, tornadoes at him. You know, they were fighting. The whole place was burning down. And then all of a sudden, he goes Sharknado.
Sharknado!
Yeah, and it's like, oh my god, if this was animated, this would be insane.
No, I mean, I can't promise, because, you know, bad CG is a thing. But, yeah, let's say they did do a good animation job. I could see this being a popular anime, honestly.
I could see people definitely picking this up just because of the, you know, you have the whole cute beast mode situation where it's like, oh, unassuming shark. Yeah, it's a shark, but, you know, not a big deal. And then all of a sudden it turns into this Megalodon three-headed octopus thing.
Well, especially, again, your targeted audience is like teenage boys and girls. When you're in high school, there's always that group of people where you're like, I fucking hate those people. They think they're so much better than me. Fuck them. I was like, that's
yeah, if only I had a shark that could eat people when I was a kid.
Shark to take out the normies. Yeah, I don't know. It's intense, but it is very funny. I don't know. I like this one. Ozzy, what's your verdict? Pick it up, check it out.
No, I definitely, like, I don't know if I continue it just because, like, it to me, it doesn't really have, like, an underarching story that connected with me. But I could see this as an anime that I would watch just because of the gags and how funny and stupid it is. Like I said, I could really see this kind of being picked up and people enjoying it. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed what I read, for sure.
All right. Well, next up's... I definitely say check it out. But next time, we have not an isekai, so you're off the hook there.
Hell yeah.
Actually, a pretty popular manga that is almost assuredly going to get adapted in the next year or so. This is Kagura Bachi. I believe I pronounced that correctly. This is the story of a guy whose dad is a blacksmith and makes basically magical swords that are able to help fight against deadly wizards and were used in a war. And essentially, the dad gets betrayed, and his son has to hunt down the swords that were taken from him using what his knowledge and his sword skills. So, pretty much straight shonen, but it's got some interesting art, and it's got some intense fight scenes. So, we'll take a look. Be sure to take a look at that one for next week. All right. Anything else?
No, I think we covered it. Definitely looking forward to next season. No, sorry that we may have not had the same reaction that some people did to this winter season, but like I said, on to the next one. Hopefully, we have a little bit more to watch this season that we can continue with, and we'll meet you back when we have the mid-season review.
Yep, sounds good. All right, thanks again, everybody, for listening. If you want to have a question or a comment, shoot us an email at RaleighAnime@gmail.com. And thanks, as always, for listening. Until next time, everybody, y'all have a good rest of your week.
Bye.